Blog Talk Radio.
All right, guys, and welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I am not your host, your typical host, Kelly Wells, who is off tonight on assignment. We'll just say he's on assignment, not with us here tonight. But I will be your acting host, Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. You can also follow my other project where I take a look at therapy and RPG gaming, like Dungeons & Dragons, tabletop gaming, at Deegtime. It's Deegtime on YouTube, so check that out. Joining me tonight is one of the usual idiots, and he's the one that did the hosting job on Sunday when we took over, or Saturday when we took over Wrestling Night in America. No, it was Sunday. That was Sunday we took over Wrestling Night in America. I can't keep my days straight, but let's say hey to Tom Stout.
Hey, I can never remember when takeover happens anymore, whether it's Saturday or Sunday. It keeps switching. I am at Tom Stout on Twitter, and I'm sure Kelly is hard at work editing our episode of 8 years back, NXT 8 years back on VIP on PW Torch that we recorded earlier today because, both of us, but I realized as we were recording that I was a little sleep deprived, a little bit more sleep deprived than I realized. And we're covering Sasha Banks's NXT debut and Eric Rowan's NXT debut. And I just start rambling as I am wont to do, and I've reined myself in a bit more, and I'm starting to do it now. But anyway, that's my all too long joke that didn't build to the punchline I was trying to go for about Kelly trying to clean up our episode after I rambled and rambled and rambled on it. But anyway, yeah, I don't think you're going to get cranky Tom tonight because I actually liked this episode, and I will in Nate our little flip flop that we like to do in these situations. I will be doing the hits and misses. I'll write that and post it tomorrow. Time that happens, I think, oh man, I'm going to be doling out the misses, and that just seemed like I'm crapping all over the show because it hasn't been good lately. And every time we do the flip flop and I take the hits and misses, we get a pretty good show, and I give it a lot of hits. So that's what we're going to have tonight.
All right. Sounds good to me. Yeah. So instead of doing the hits and misses, I did Kelly's live recap. So you can check that out on pwtorch.com. I got that up, and God, I do not envy you guys that do these live recaps every week. Wow. Yeah, they're not fun, but it's done and it's up there and you can check it out. So
when you offered to cover it, I was like, hey man, groovy.
I kind of figured, you know, but why not? Why not? I got a nice new keyboard. I wanted to, you know, go nuts and go to town.
Nice.
All right. So let's talk main event. Main event was Ember Moon versus Raquel Gonzalez. Gonzalez went over in 12 minutes and 39 seconds in what I thought was a pretty good match. We had a Tony Storm interfere towards the end, or not towards the end, after the end of the match. We also had Rhea Ripley make an entrance, and her and Raquel Gonzalez kind of stared each other down right towards the end there, right as the show went off the air, kind of prepping us for what seems to be a battle of Raquel Gonzalez versus Rhea Ripley. So that's something that I've been looking forward to personally for quite some time now, but I'll ramble about that in a little bit. Tom, what'd you think of the main event?
Yeah, so on one side of it, we've got Ember, who has just produced hit after hit after hit since she's been back on NXT. And on the other side, we've got Raquel, who has just been on a steady, steady, steady climb ever since she made her, what I believe was her TV debut in the first Mae Young Classic. So I've enjoyed watching that. So this is the sort of thing I love seeing on NXT TV is watching people's progress. And if I'm being brutally honest, I'm not sure if I'm entirely buying Raquel as the monster that they're billing her to be, but I like where the pieces are for her. I missed the headline or whatever it was over the past couple days where apparently Dakota Kai has something bothering her, and she was holding her neck in the video tonight. So I'm probably something in her neck, hopefully not serious. But I think it honestly even made me wonder if it was worked. I don't want to, you know, I hope that Dakota is well, and I don't really suspect that, but there's even a part of me that was like, I think that this is a good time for Raquel to spread her wings by herself without having Dakota there. So that's probably advantageous. And like I said, I like where all the pieces lie here, because the way that the chips fell tonight, including the little brawl earlier in the night between EO, Tony, and Ember, and then with Raquel going over here with the post-match angle that you're talking about, we're looking at a situation where we're leading to Raquel versus EO, and Raquel is just going to be highlighted like crazy heading toward, I presume, New Year's Evil on January 6th. And in the meantime, we are indeed, as suspected, going to get what feels like a number one contenders feud between Ember and Tony. So the pieces are all exactly in place as they should be. I'm very optimistic about the direction here. And as far as Rhea being involved, I know that we've been hovering around saying, oh, she's leaving for so long. But now here we are at a point where I'm thinking, if knowing what I know about Rhea and Raquel, I feel like if Rhea was allowed to personally handpick anyone to give a big rub to on her way out before she finally just says farewell to Black and Gold, I believe she would pick Raquel. So I think that is the situation we're in now.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if she was to pick somebody like Raquel for a rub, I mean, I think it's a great pick, not just probably because, you know, personally, I know, you know, like you've talked about them. They've worked they worked together in a tag team, in dark matches and stuff on the Coconut Loop and things like that. But, you know, they're so similar in their styles. You've got one powerhouse, you know, that's kind of on her way out. And then you have another powerhouse who's kind of rising up here. So it is kind of, it'd be kind of cool to see, you know, Raquel get the rub, kind of maybe get a good decisive win over Rhea Ripley before she goes up, if that is the case. At least, you know, that's kind of like my thoughts anyway. I also am kind of iffy on buying Raquel Gonzalez right now as this kind of like monster. She played a really great heater for Dakota Kai, don't get me wrong, but she, to me anyway, still seems kind of like a background player, not necessarily somebody in the forefront. Granted that did start to change after she got the pin at War Games. I kind of started to look at her as a little bit more of a credible threat. You know, they're starting to build her up to be more of a credible threat. But, you know, here tonight, in the, you know, match against Ember Moon, she started to even feel like a little bit more of a credible threat to me. I'm still not 100% sold, but, you know, she looked really dominant here tonight. I thought the two of them had great chemistry together. So, you know, Ember was selling for her really well. You know, and Raquel just really came off looking pretty dominant here. So I have high hopes for it. I think, you know, no matter what happens, you know, here, I think Raquel's in a good spot, you know, kind of progress up the card and you know, hopefully kind of fill that powerhouse void that might be left if Rhea ends up, going to the main roster sooner rather than later.
Ember was just such a good pick for this one, because she, throughout the entire match, the story was that she was trying to use her agility to get over on Raquel.
Yeah.
But Raquel's power was just too much for her. Even if Ember was able to counter, let's just look at the very end of it, the one-armed power bomb, her agility still wasn't enough. Raquel still picked her up in that one-armed power bomb. And I will mention that just because it happened right beforehand, I really liked Raquel. I don't think we've seen it too often. I feel like I notice it when we see it, but I liked her pulling back out her Stan Hansen lariat that she used to use as her finish. She really lays that in well.
Yeah, that was something I noted in the report, that like that lariat was like, that was a massive, massive lariat. It looked great. Loved it. But there was one other thing I wanted to touch. Tony Storm and Ember Moon. Yeah, it kind of does seem like, obviously, that's going to be a feud we're going to be seeing next as well, potentially. And I agree, probably for a number one contender feud type of deal. But I also kind of wonder where Raquel and Rhea are going to slot in there. I know, you know, Raquel said that she wants the NXT women's title and all that. So it's like, I don't know if maybe they'll somehow kind of like what they're doing with the men, which we'll get into when we get there. But, you know, where we kind of have four men toiling around for the NXT, you know, title. I wonder if they might be doing the same here and kind of get these four women, you know, in the mix before New Year's Evil. If not, then maybe, you know, Raquel or Rhea, depending on who goes over in the feud, most likely Raquel, if I had to guess. You know, maybe it'll be after New Year's Evil or something like that. But at least that's my immediate thought. So with that, unless you have anything else to add on the main event, Tom, So let's go to the phone lines.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So we will go to the phones, and we will talk with our good buddy Darrell. Darrell, what's going on, man?
Not too much. How are you guys doing tonight?
Not too bad.
Good, man.
Doing all right. Doing all right. So what did you think of the show tonight? What you got for us?
It was a pretty good show. Pretty good follow-up. A lot of angles being set and everything. I like how it was done. With that said, you said good segue into the question that I wanted to ask. My first question for you guys tonight, with what came out today with the four guys who came out, how did you guys like that? It's four new main event guys. Not new all the way, but you have one with Priest. You got Karrion Kross coming back, not shown, but you know his proxy is out there speaking for him and things of the sort like that. And I like seeing Kyle O'Reilly coming out there and stuff. It makes me feel like a New Japan feel where you might be in a faction, but anybody in the faction can challenge for the title and not be a breakup or anything like that. And I like what happened afterwards with Kenny and Dane coming back and giving Pete Dunne a match so you can look at him as a legitimate threat also. How did you guys like that? And do you think we're going straight to Kross, or do we get Kross at whatever takeover is happening on Royal Rumble weekend?
Yeah, so I think so. First off, I like this kind of reset that they're doing at the main event level. You know, they're like you said, you know, all of the guys kind of involved right now are relatively new to the main event. Karrion Kross technically is a former NXT champion at this point, but you know, obviously he had to vacate it pretty quick, and he was also pretty new to the roster even when he won it. So he does kind of still feel, at least in my mind, especially coming back from injury too, at least in my mind, he still kind of feels fresh and new. So I would agree there. Kyle O'Reilly breaking off, I wouldn't say breaking off because he hasn't broken off from Undisputed Era, but kind of standing up and standing out, saying he wants to be the next one, you know, hold the title. I think is a great move. They've been building him up to kind of be in that spot for a little while. And Pete Dunne he's incredible, especially like the new look he's got since he's been back, and he got really ripped, really cut. I think, you know, he would make a great contender. I don't know if I can necessarily see him winning the belt, but I can see him certainly, you know, putting up a good fight for it. And then Priest, you know, we've talked about quite a bit over the, throughout the course of the show. And you know, Priest is somebody that I think is definitely ready for the main event. Whether he's going to be an NXT champion or not is I'm still kind of trying to figure out myself. I feel like he's kind of probably going to be almost like in that Kane type of a role where he's not fully like in the main roster, but he's not fully in the main, you know, the upper card either. Kind of goes dances between the two. At least it's kind of what I'm thinking. Maybe he'll get a token win or something eventually. But you know, that's kind of what I thought about that. Before I throw over to Tom to answer the question here, I'm going to throw to an email from David Podnar. So David says, without hitting one particular item, this seemed like a reset night, almost a Raw after WrestleMania type feel. The new challenger set up for the women's and men's title and the Gargano Way celebration leading the tag match for next week. Hopefully this will lead to a nice, slower build-up for the next takeover. Stay safe and have a good night, everyone. Dave Podnar from Pittsburgh. He didn't really have a question there. It was more of a comment, kind of like on the reset, and that's kind of what we were talking about. So I figured that was a good place to slot it in before I threw it over to Tom.
Yeah, it fits very nicely. I was thinking of I was thinking of the email as Darrell was speaking. I'm not sure I share David's pure optimism, if I'm reading it correctly, but that's just based on NXT's recent track record over the past couple months. But as with the women, it's the same with the men. The pieces are in place as I feel they should be right now, and I am I'm optimistic that we're going to get a good build to New Year's Evil, and then a good build to the next takeover, which I am going to take the risk of predicting will happen in February, as opposed to on Royal Rumble weekend, since they've been separating the takeovers from main roster pay-per-view weekends recently, and New Year's Evil to Takeover Rumble weekend just feels way too short. Then again, wouldn't put it past 2020 NXT to do that kind of thing. That's just where I'm where my head is at right now. Darrell, you would probably call this a building show. And I really, really thought that they set the stage very well with this opening. You could call it typical with everybody interrupting everybody to make their entrances, but this felt like NXT, where you've got guys who have been on the come up and feel like they're finally worthy of that main event belt, coming out and Damian Priest shedding more, he sort of kind of got involved in it again later in the show. Not really. But he's now graduating from the North American scene. Kyle O'Reilly, yes, he had that takeover main event recently, but he's reinserting himself there. Pete Dunne, his unfortunate Oompa Loompa tan aside, he's the one who, I agree, doesn't feel like he could win it, but doesn't feel like he should win it, just because that's not how NXT usually plays with their top title, with somebody of his caliber. It rattles around in my brain because they've changed that logic a bit here in 2020. But Dunn doesn't feel like a contender in the way that we typically understand true NXT champion contenders to be, since he had that historic UK run. It's sort of like, okay, that was your chip, carry that one around. But I still like him being inserted here, because as we observed on Sunday night, he and Kyle were so focal in that War Games match. This feels like it's the spot for Dunn right now. On top of it all, I love Finn just sort of backing off and being like, all right, these guys can tussle. I'm the champ. I'm going to go walk away. He looked extremely confident. Finn came off very well throughout this whole thing. And then, Cross's music plays. Scarlett comes out looking like Madonna is filming something for a Silent Hill music video, which is actually a compliment. And Finn just has this great, great look on his face. Like, oh yeah, I've been waiting for this. Bring it on. I really thought Finn sold that moment well. And if I had to predict it this early out, I would say that Cross is going to take it back at New Year's Evil. I think that's where we're heading. And I like, we're covering a lot of ground here that branched off into other storylines throughout the night. But I also like Cross having the interim, let's just say, speed bump of Damian Priest, which honestly, this is knee-jerky of me to say, but it feels like Cross going over Priest, whenever that might happen a week or two from now, could be a Priest farewell from NXT, and then he could debut in the Royal Rumble or something. But yeah, giant thumbs up all around for this. I thought this was a really good resetting of the table for the men's top title.
No, and I completely agree. Completely agree with you there. I think, and I also agree with Karrion Kross prediction. I think that kind of makes the most sense, especially where all signs kind of pointed to him having a relatively dominant, albeit probably short run with the title, because I know at least the original reports for Karrion Kross are saying that they wanted him main roster bound sooner rather than later, but. I think right now it probably does look like it's going to end up on Karrion Kross's shoulder or around his waist or wherever he wore it. I don't remember. Darrell, what else you got for us?
And I'm glad, Tom, that you went that way, because I was going to say, and you did call it correct, I was going to say building episode, because that's why I felt like you would get a takeover right after this, because I think they were going to build to secondary title matches and stuff like that, which will build to other rivalries where you might see Pete Dunne win, but then he lose to Finn and maybe get jumped on, but he did something to Kyle, which would start their rivalry. Would Kyle come after the match and do something like that? I felt like you would get Killian Dane and Drake Maverick for a tag team title match, which will lead to, my boys getting the title match at TakeOver. Also leading with Damian Priest getting a match against I can't even say his name right now, but you just said it, on New Year's Evil, which will lead to him versus Finn, not Damian Priest, but Scarlett Bordeaux's, who she's been proxy for, because I can't think of his name right now. That leads to that, because I like that.
Yeah, Karrion Kross.
Karrion Kross, yeah. I like that look that Finn had when the music played. So, you know, all of that lead into that, which would lead to my second question is, I like how they was able to venture off and put with Johnny Gargano, and we can tell who's the next contender for his title. And maybe he don't get to defend this title all the way, and we get my boy Kushida winning that title, which could end at a takeover where you see Kushida and Ruff teaming up at maybe New Year's Eve, which would lead to Kushida getting that match. What do you guys think about that, and how you like that?
Yeah, that's actually that's something I didn't occur to me because I was writing up the live report and I kind of wasn't paying attention to the show as much as I probably would have liked to or I would have normally because like I said earlier, doing those write ups suck. But yeah, that's probably a good point. You know, having Kushida come in here, he's kind of been involved in the North American title scene in the past. This probably feels like a re-entry to him in that title scene. So, I'm totally fine with that. I thought it was a little weird that they announced Priest for it and then had him getting taken out by Cross. Weird in a way, but then at the same time, it's kind of a cool story building thing because you've got him in a match and then taken out and all of that. The status, what's the question or what's the status going to be of Damian Priest and, Kushida coming out. So no, overall, a thumbs up for me for that. What about you, Tom? What'd you think about this segment?
Yeah, that part of it was a little bit weird just because they had already established Damian Priest being interested in Finn's title, but they did this with a number of people tonight, and I feel like they ultimately got away with it. I think announcing that tag match for later, I noticed it first with Damian, or maybe I know. No, I guess I noticed it first with Dane and Dunn, since they went straight to from that opening promo segment to Dunn in the back being attacked by Killian Dane. And you just knew that somebody was going to come through that door since they kept it framed up in the background. But they did this with a number of people tonight surrounding both top titles. And I feel like they got away with it because it's believable that all of these people would be interested in the top title while they are also dealing with their own personal feuds. And I even wrote down in my notes before they announced that Priest was scheduled to have that tag match against Gargano and Theory, that I was, even though it's justifiable that Priest would have unfinished business with the Gargano way, I was relieved that we were moving on from the story. But they at least cleaned it up, that Priest made it known that he still had an issue with them and was looking to take care of it. And then he got waylaid by Cross. It was a brief attack, but I thought Cross looked awesome. I have definitely been won over by what he appears to bring to the table, even though we haven't seen too much of it. But I am high on that right now. As for the segment where it all went down, I did think that Gargano was way too scripted, which again, maybe I can forgive a tiny, tiny bit because one of his jokes in the segment was that a certain joke from somebody else didn't quite land properly. And he was like, oh, maybe we should have rehearsed that part. So he's suggesting that they rehearse some of this before they go out, which obviously we know that they do. But in kayfabe now, we are to believe that that is happening. So maybe Johnny gets away with sounding overly scripted here, although that was absolutely the case. What I liked about it was that this is the most, even though it was only a very little bit, this is the most personality we've gotten to see from Indy Hartwell yet. And I like the position that she's in right now because she's under Candace's wing and she's already got a lot of promise, I feel. So getting to show off some personality and hopefully get gradually inserted into more and more spots, I'm really looking forward to seeing her grow and show off her unique personality more. So that was a glimpse of this tonight. And let's see, I think that about covers it for that segment.
I think so. Darrell, what else you got?
Okay, Tommaso Ciampa. How did y'all like that? How did you like Timothy Thatcher coming out there and him Ciampa with what he did with him? How do you like this continuation with these two guys in some type of thing with each other? How did you guys like that?
So we'll talk about the match and then we'll kind of talk about the Thatcher stuff. We'll kind of all wrap it all into one. So the match itself was Tommaso Ciampa versus Cameron Grimes, with Ciampa going over in 10 minutes and 22 seconds. I personally really liked this match. You know, Cameron Grimes just basically trying to fight from underneath the whole time, which was great. You know, you've got like your top star essentially in NXT, you know, arguably your top star, you know, going out here and getting a pretty decisive clean win over Grimes. You know, personally, like I said, I really liked it. Having Thatcher on the outside doing exactly what Ciampa did to him, sitting there in a folding chair right at the base of the ramp, watching the match, thought that was great. Now, you know, that was the big question on Saturday, or one of the big questions that we had, or Sunday. I keep saying Saturday. On Sunday, we were talking after TakeOver. It's like, what do they do with Timothy Thatcher now? You know, he's lost just about every major feud, if not every major feud he's been in. Where does he go from here? And, you know, I don't even think that I thought at the time that they would continue this feud. I kind of figured it was just a one and done type of a thing, you know, to kind of reintroduce Ciampa to the roster, to the show. But they're clearly kind of running with it here. They had Tyler Rust do a little bit of interference, one of Thatcher's students in his school there. Had, you know, run in, do some interference, and that's kind of, you know, almost cost Ciampa the match at the end. Overall, like I said, I think this is great. Thatcher's, like, to me anyway, when I saw him out tonight, he didn't seem like he was defined down with the loss. I mean, the loss that he had on at TakeOver, you know, he lost to Ciampa, who is, like I said, arguably one of the top stars. So, you know, the shine that I thought he might have lost, I didn't get that, like, when I first saw him tonight. And then, you know, he didn't really back down from Ciampa. You know, there really wasn't any physicality there either between the two, but didn't really back down, you know, showing not afraid of him. So I personally like this, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing it progress. I kind of just assumed it was going to be a one and done type of a deal, but apparently not. How about you, Tom?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious where it's going to go. Grimes definitely fits, even though I doubt that they'll touch again anytime soon. You know, talk to me next week, maybe I'll be surprised. But Grimes definitely fits Ciampa's recent mission statement, you know, sort of addressing the riffraff in the NXT locker room or whatever, more than Thatcher fits it. I do also... that's what I was gonna say, that even though Grimes does fit it better, it is funny that Ciampa picked Grimes as his opponent when Grimes has just been losing every single match in his recent feud against Dexter Lumis. So you know, it still works, and I like that Ciampa is I guess I'll just stick with the general term that I like, that Ciampa is working a gimmick where he basically just gets to sit there and pick who he wants to work with. And his reasoning is just that he's the grumpy NXT legend who's just like, you know, let me take you out there and show you what's what. So he's basically,
man, get off my lawn.
Work with. Yeah. So, you know, it is, you know, this is not a slight on Grimes. I've said over and over again how talented I think the guy is, but the way that he's been framed lately, it is a little weird that it took Ciampa so long to put him away. But obviously, this is mostly about Thatcher sitting there on the outside. And I don't know what to make of it yet. Just like on Sunday, I wasn't sure what to make of that stare down. But it does seem like I buy Thatcher when he says, like, I had nothing to do with Taylor Rust coming down to the ring. You know, I'm just...
Yeah,
I don't know if he said anything else. It was just the nonverbal looks between the two, and I'm just sort of like, aw, Thatcher wants to be his best friend. So I feel like we're leading toward an alliance here of some kind. That's what it feels like. It's weird, but I'm intrigued. I don't know. I'm sifting through it. We'll see what happens. I'm very curious. This this segment, while not like great in and of itself, it succeeded in perpetuating my curiosity of where the heck this is going. And then, of course, we got a much more upfront presentation of Malcolm Bivens talking to Tyler Rust and being like, hey, man, so I gave you my business card. Let's start working. What's going on? So further curiosity. I'm just curiosity abounds. I'm very interested in where this is all leading.
Which I got to give you credit for, because I didn't even notice that in the background of that segment. Was it last week or last Wednesday?
I was lucky that I caught it out of the corner of my eye.
Yeah, because I don't know if most people would have necessarily caught that, but I went back and I saw it. You know, I was kind of curious. You know, after we got off the air, I don't know if most people would have necessarily seen it, but yeah, I'm kind of liking that they're rolling with that and bringing Bivens back. You know, like I don't know what happened to the two powerhouses he was with. I can't think of what the hell their name. India Share, but I bet they're probably just, you know, still eating the punishment from sharing that picture, Keith Lee.
The one that led to higher ratings. But, you know, of the thing.
Right,
poor,
right.
Poor Rinku and Sarov.
Yeah, yes. I'm trying to think of their names. That's right. All right. Cool. So, Darrell, do you have anything else for us, or should we move on?
Okay, my last thing for you guys is, and again, I got to say, I'm just throwing this out here and fantasy booking. What would interest you guys in this card? And I'm just throwing for this New Year's Evil. If you get a Raquel Gonzalez versus, I'm not going to say Raquel, but you get a men's title match versus Pete Dunne with Kyle O'Reilly on talking on the broadcast table. You get Damian Priest versus Killian Dane. You get Leon Ruff and Kushida versus Johnny and Austin Theory. And you get Rhea Ripley. Yeah, you get Rhea Ripley versus Raquel. And you get two people who probably be entering Royal Rumble, and that's where they make their debut. How do you guys like that card? And would you like that leading up to a future takeover? And that's it for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, the card, it doesn't sound bad. I'd definitely like to see Pete Dunne and Balor, and having Kyle O'Reilly in commentary for that, I think would be like printing money. I think that would be great. He'd do a great job at it. The rest of the card sounds good to me too. Any immediate thoughts, Tom?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I think that the matches you're proposing are going to happen, but I think they're going to happen over the next 1 or 2 weeks of TV. I knew I was forgetting something when talking about that Johnny Gargano thing, because Darrell, you brought up Kushida, and that was just like, I thought the same thing as you. This seems to be leading toward Kushida versus Johnny Gargano for the North American Championship. And I could see it working out well for Kushida in two different ways. It's within the language of the Gargano character that he could lose that, even though it would be his first big defense after regaining it. So I could see Kushida winning it there and, you know, riding that momentum. But I could also see him seeming like the rightful winner who does not walk away with the belt because of interference from Austin Theory. And that, you know, hopefully they would keep him around on TV in more of just a utility player role, which is what he's been in. But yeah, I'm optimistic for that. But I feel like this tag match, we're probably going to see it next week or the week after, probably next week for that one. And then, Raquel and Rhea, I feel like that's going to lead to Raquel versus Io at New Year's Evil. Damian Priest versus Karrion Kross, I feel like that's going to lead to Karrion Kross versus Balor at New Year's Evil. So I think we've still got to get through these next few weeks of TV and then do another post-evil reset toward whenever the next takeover is going to be.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. So, all right, cool. Thanks, Darrell. And we will let's move on here. So we kind of touched on Pete Dunne and Killian Dane a little bit. So let's talk about the match here. We had the two of those guys going over. It was 13 minutes and 54 seconds, and Pete Dunne got the win. And you know, like we said, it was set up earlier in the night when Pete Dunne was attacked by Dane backstage. I actually enjoyed this match more than I thought I was going to. The past couple times that we saw Killian Dane out there, I mean, he, you know, granted he's been out with Maverick in tag matches, but I wasn't like overly impressed with him. Like you know, I talked about it, you know, the last few times he's been out. Here tonight, though, I really liked the chemistry that he and Dunne seemed to have together. You know, whether just, I mean, I don't know, maybe, you know, something clicked them tonight or Dunne was just bumping for him. Great. I don't really know, but they seem to have some great chemistry. And I, you know, I like the way they work together. And, you know, Dunne kind of, you know, playing that, it was almost like a heel underdog in a way. You know, because he, you know, was the heel in the match. Dane had the crowd behind him. He was kind of almost playing that heel underdog, and it was interesting. It was kind of fun to watch and see him try to pull off, and I think he did it pretty well. Before I keep going on that, Tom, what'd you think of the about Grimes, not Grimes and Ciampa, because we already talked about that, Dunne and Dane.
Yeah, I don't view Dane as a top guy, but I've been very impressed with the heel work he's been doing since returning post-sanity. I think that he really gets what his role is and achieves it every time out and gets over his opponent. And that is what he did here. And I was especially surprised in what after Ember and Raquel would be my second favorite match of tonight. I was surprised that Dane was able to, you mentioned it sort of regarding Dunne working from underneath a little bit. And I picked up on it from the other side. Which isn't to say both aren't true at different points in the match. This match, if it had one fault, I think it ran a little long. So there was definitely time to fit in, you know, a variance of storytelling here. But Dane played the sympathetic babyface. I never would have pegged him as a guy playing the sympathetic babyface, especially at his size and the usual dominance that he shows. And I think he pulled it off. So, yeah, I agree that Dane became more likable tonight. But perhaps the biggest success is reinserting Lorcan and Birch here, or not reinserting, but, you know, honestly, I'll stick with the word because it felt like a reinsertion. I think it was, especially by this point in the night, because we were, I believe, well into the second hour at this point, or maybe this was the crossover, whatever it was, we were a just fair amount of the way through the show. And it seemed like the program was deliberately not mentioning McAfee very much. And I'm not saying that McAfee's just going away. I'm sure he'll show back up again soon, but it seemed suspect that they weren't mentioning him very much. And we had only seen Pete Dunne out there by himself to that sort of was rattling around in the back of my mind. Like, wow, are they actually moving away from this Team McAfee thing? So showing that Lorcan, Birch and Dunne are still aligned, I think is a strong move here on this post takeover show. As well as, like Darrell was pointing out, a great just fitting in the puzzle piece. Like, yep, this is what we've been waiting for. Maverick and Dane, who have the pre-existing issue with this team, are now back, and now we've got Dunn's angling for the top title. Dane was angling for Dunne, and now that can very easily just flow right on over to the tag title feud where it should be. And I totally agree with Darrell about where GYV is headed, but that's a completely different match. But yeah, this was another strong thumbs up. I think that they really set the pieces in place where they should be.
No, and I definitely agree there as well. And I, you know, you're talking about you know, Dane kind of playing the sympathetic face. It's like, you know, and there were definitely times with the match where I got that too. I guess just for me, like, you know, Pete Dunne kind of playing the smaller, David versus Goliath. That's what I'm thinking of. You're kind of playing like the heel David or whatever was what stood out to me, but no, I absolutely picked up on that too. So,
you know what else I noticed in this match? Again, apart from the fact that they are Oompa Loompa orange, Pete Dunne has really nice legs.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just
absolutely.
Like, wow, Pete Dunne has some pretty legs.
No, like, I mean, that guy is like, that guy is jacked, like.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, and There's something about the tag title scene I wanted. Oh, you said, yeah, it kind of seemed like a reinsertion. And I would absolutely agree with that, because we've kind of had the tag titles kind of, you know, wrapped up in the main event scene for a few weeks now. So, you know, having the tag titles return to the tag team scene, you know, certainly felt like a bit of a reintroduction here, a bit of a reset in a way. And I also agree that, you know, kind of showing that there's still that unity with McAfee's stable, even if McAfee's not around right now. I think that's a good, you know, good call as well. So, thumbs up.
Oh man, Pat McAfee should be in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. Right. Like go from the pre-show. He should go from the pre-show panel booth and like jump over the
yes.
desk or something.
Oh,
and
my God. Yes.
With his like shorts on and stuff.
That's yep. Yep. Same way
for that.
Yes.
All for
I don't
that.
Know why it took me this long to think of it.
All right. So, you brought up Grizzled Young Vets. So why don't we go over there, and we'll talk about Grizzled Young Vets versus Ever-Rise versus Imperium. Now, this match went approximately 7 minutes long, and I say approximately because I forgot to hit the timer on the stopwatch, so I had to rewind and kind of do the time, and I didn't feel like doing math, so I'm like, it's right around 7 minutes, so that's good enough government work. So yeah, it was about 7 minutes. It was a triple threat tag team match where Ever-Rise kind of ducked out of the match for the majority of it. They were kind of hiding outside the ring, and they kept trying to steal wins and kind of take cheap shots on the other two teams, knowing that, you know, they were kind of outmatched against these two much better teams, much higher teams on the card, I guess, if you want to put it that way. Yeah, like I said, I think well, before we get into what I think, we'll go to Tom. What did
All
you
right.
think?
Well, I think that the various combinations of these teams that we've seen over the past number of weeks has not been good TV, but at least it has shown consistency in who they are putting over. And so even if it's just above the pittance that the tag division has been thus far, we're at least reestablishing some level of hierarchy and, you know, Ever-Rise in there to be the bump takers, with GYV going over, you know, establishes exactly where these teams fall. So even though this match was this, you know, it's not my kind of thing, just like so many other segments in the night, it got the job done. And at least in this case, it did not overstay its welcome. It wasn't another like 20 minute long affair like we got last week.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree there. No, it is nice kind of getting some, but like you said, the hierarchy back in the tag team division, because it kind of seemed like it's been in limbo for a while. You know, there was Breezango as a tag team, and then there kind of just seems like there's a whole bunch of other and Ever-Rise, but then there was a whole bunch of other like thrown together tag teams like Killian Dain and Drake Maverick and things like that. So seeing like, you know, Grizzled Young Vets coming back, that is a major thumbs up for me. I'm glad to see them back and kind of so strong in the tag division. You know, here, especially with they did get the win. I don't know if I said that, Imperium got the win here. You know, but, you know, Ever-Rise, they came in like, you know, like I was talking about trying to steal the wins. And I like the fact that they're still kind of included in that hierarchy. They're this jobber team. They've been around now for a little while in NXT. But they, yeah, it was almost like, they're now in AEW, the Revival. Before the Revival was the Revival, they were calling themselves like the Mechanics or something
yeah.
like that. Yeah. And like they, you know, they'd been around, we'd seen their faces and things like that, but like it really wasn't until they became the Revival that things took off. Now, Ever-Rise is not like they got a reset or anything here, but like they're starting to get a little bit more focus and, they're kind of building their characters out a little bit. And I mean, you know, their characters now, I guess, are kind of just, you know, that sly chicken crap heel, if you will. But I like the fact that they're getting some time here to like work and kind of, you know, establish that, lower card tag team. I think they're doing a good job with it. So, but, yeah, I agree. I think Ever-Rise, Grizzled Young Vets are probably going to be, NXT tag team champions before long. So that's just me. All right. Then what else? We got one more match and then we'll go into some of the segments, and we'll finish up with a couple emails. So, all right, we'll talk about the last match of the night, which wasn't the last. I think it was the second match of the night, which was Isaiah Swerve Scott versus Jake Atlas. Atlas won in about it was roughly 4 minutes and 29 seconds. I took a couple seconds to hit stop on the stopwatch, so I know that's, you know, a couple, give or take a couple seconds, 4:29. Atlas got a kind of a bit of a fluke win after you know, he was able to roll Swerve over after a submission hold, kind of get a quick win. Swerve looked pretty surprised, pretty shocked after the win. I thought this was actually a really great, solid match. I've been really high on Jake Atlas, been really high on Swerve for quite some time now. They had some great chemistry together. They worked well together. They have in the past as well, but I think it was mostly in tag matches, if memory serves. It was also nice to see Swerve back on TV. He's been off TV for a while now. Tom, you might know why. I don't know exactly why he was off TV, if they were just keeping him off TV for a while. But it was nice to see him come back. And, it's a bit of a heel turn for him here. If memory serves, he might have started showing signs of it before he was off TV. I don't remember. My memory is not that great nowadays. Not that it ever really was. But he certainly showed a heel turn here tonight. You're playing the heel in the match, and then after the match, not accepting the handshake from Jake Atlas and kind of walking back up the ramp all snarl faced and like, I'm a heel now. But I kind of like it. I'm curious to see how he pulls it off. I personally see him, now granted, I've never seen any of his work really, with the exception of like an odd match here and there, but like no real character work of his outside of NXT. So I don't know if he's really done any heel work or anything outside of this, but like at least the Swerve character I've kind of seen as a babyface. So I'm curious to see how he kind of transitions into a heel. But I think he can do it. I think he's got the skills to do it. So I'm curious to see where that goes. And I'm also excited to see this feud continue, because I think these two are going to work pretty well together. And then maybe, you know, one of the two will wind up getting up to the cruiserweight title, which that reminds me, we didn't see Legato tonight. Yeah. I didn't even think about that until now, but, what about you, Tom? What did you think of the, all of this good stuff with, the cruiserweights here?
Yeah. So, Atlas has become a consistent presence on TV. But as I've said, nothing they've really done with him, despite what I always say is my belief on him based on the admittedly little that I saw him on the indies. But when I saw him, he was always match of the night. Just really, really solid stuff. And he struck me as someone who can get better matches out of lesser workers. Because I saw him do that. But despite all that, I just don't feel like what they've done with him, albeit consistently on TV, has really amounted to much that's caused me to believe in his push, I guess is the way I'll choose to phrase it, until tonight. And yeah, it's just one night. But going over Swerve here, who has been, off for a while, and I'm not sure exactly why. I know he's now doing his Swerve City podcast for the WWE Network, but I can't imagine it's too much more strenuous than what he was already doing. I mean, it probably adds some to his plate, but I'm not sure why he was off TV for a bit. But he's been very prominent in this division. Getting the win over Swerve tonight feels way more significant than a win over Tony Nese, no matter how many times they remind us that Tony Nese was that they once tried putting the cruiserweight title on him, and then they were like, oh boy, this isn't working. Let's move a different direction real quick. So that's that for Atlas. For the first time, probably since the interim tournament when they were calling it that, I've got some hope for where they're going with Atlas and for Swerve. Yes, hope, because I don't think any of us really knew what to do with Swerve after he lost so definitively over and over again to Escobar in various forms and fashions. So I'm all for trying him heel. And I'm not a Lucha Underground expert, so I'm, you know, far from it. So I don't know what he did or didn't do as Killshot, but single thing that I saw him do on the indies, and I saw a lot more from Swerve on the indies and other promotions like MLW than I did from Jake Atlas. So I got a pretty good eyeful of Swerve on the indies. Every single thing I saw him do was as a charismatic babyface or an underdog babyface, like the MLW's first show back, which they were calling One Shot because Court Bauer says that he wasn't planning on doing anything else until that show turned out to be a big success. They build the main event, or they promoted the main event as Swerve being the humble family man and Ricochet on the other side of the ring being King Ricochet, who just thought he was such a hot shot. And they did all these promos online against one another. And that was the first time I had ever seen Swerve do anything. And before he even came to the ring, I was already on his side because of that babyface stuff that he was working. So, yeah, this will be very interesting. I believe he can pull it off, but we'll have to see. I think it's smart to add a different layer to him at this point.
No, I absolutely agree. And I don't know if you just heard an echo of yourself, but I accidentally refreshed the page for our feed and all of a sudden you started talking and completely threw me off. So I don't know actually what you just said, because that just threw me off. So that's
It was very, very astute, let me tell you.
All right. Cool. Cool. It was astute. It was groundbreaking and it was life changing, I'm sure. But I caught most of it. I caught most of what you said until my computer turned against me here. I agree. I think, like you said, we didn't really know what to do with Swerve after he lost, you know, I think it was twice to Escobar. I remember talking about that with you guys, and it's like, you know, where exactly does he go from here? So maybe that is why they kept him off TV for a while and they're trying something new with him. That absolutely makes sense.
I think it could be just as simple as that.
Certainly. So cool. Works for me. So we've got a couple segments that we haven't touched on, and we get some emails here. I'm going to start with, we kind of sort of talked about it a little bit, so I guess I'll start with that. We'll talk about the Gargano segment in ring, where the Garganos came out and talked about, or came out with, so it was Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae, Indy Hartwell, and Austin Theory made it out to the ring and kind of talked about their accomplishments at War Games and things of that nature. I thought it was a pretty effective segment. I'm struggling to find my notes here on it at the moment. So Tom, talk about it while I find my notes, because my browser crashed.
Find them quick, because I already covered most of what I was going to say about it. I'll just add that I my eyebrow raised a little bit when Johnny was, you know, he presented that silly little trophy, which I want to make fun of, but it was supposed to be dumb. And overall, the segment was probably more dumb than something that is already supposed to be dumb. But, you know, I already mentioned before that, like other stuff on the show, it got the job done and got things where they need to be. But Johnny was talking about trophies or whatever it was and said, "And the only trophy I need is my North American Championship." And Candace sort of looked at him like, "What the heck? What about me?" And
I didn't pick up on that. That's great.
You know, and maybe that's just the face, you know, maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe I'm not supposed to read anything into it. And I'm certainly not trying to highlight that moment a lot, because they've done other little moments like that that you can read into on various Dinner with the Gargano segments. But it just makes me wonder, like, are we eventually, maybe months and months and months down the road, leading to something where we can look back at all these little moments and Candace finally gives Johnny the business. I don't know, but that was one little highlight that stood out to me.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me, because think about it. Like, remember, like, they had the women's battle royal where Indy Hartwell was helping Candice LeRae, and then they brought it up like months later.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know. And I don't know if that was long-term booking or if it was just, you know, hey, look at this. Like, we kept noticing that Indy was saving Candace or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I forget who asked Triple H about it on one of the calls, but Triple H was like, "Oh, well, you know, we're telling a story with Johnny, and you're just going to have to wait and see." And he really suggested that there is a long-term plan. And I wasn't sure if long-term plan meant the ghost faces or if it meant like, oh no, they mega powers this.
Yeah.
And it's all super long term. I don't know.
Yeah, certainly. So, but no, I really like the chemistry that these four have together. I think more so, you know, Candace, Johnny, obviously, and Theory, the three of them. In Indy, maybe it's just because right now she's still playing off the neck injury or something, but she just seems, no pun intended, stiff to me. Really, no pun intended. That's just kind of the way it came out. But she seems a little stiff to me at the moment anyway. Maybe it's the way it's supposed to be. I don't know, but it's like a small nitpick, but because I think the four of them work really well together. So, you know, I like all the you know, comedic timing. You know, you get Theory coming in like the Milky Way, which I thought was great. You know, I like these guys. Yeah, I forgot we kind of talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Priest getting attacked by Cross. So, cool. I'm gonna scratch that off my list because I didn't do that before. We talked about, we talked a little bit about the Kushida thing. Okay. So we'll go into the Casualties of War Games, video package. This was a package that they kind of hyped before going to a commercial break on commentary. They came back from the commercial right into it. But it was, it kind of seemed like it was a relatively long video package. I didn't time it, but I felt like it went on for probably at least maybe 5 minutes or so. But it was really all of, I wouldn't say all of, because I think there were five wrestlers that were not involved, but the men and the women that were involved in War Games talking about how brutal it was, really hyping up how dangerous and just, you know, vicious this match type is, talking about all the various injuries in the match. I know that, you know, Tom talked about Dakota Kai showing up in this segment, holding her neck. And you brought this up, and I meant to as well at the time, and I forgot. I also am kind of wondering if the whole Kai thing is a work. I haven't seen anything personally saying that, and we didn't hear anything on the call, the Triple H call, that there was anything wrong with Dakota Kai. So, I don't know. I don't know if that's a work or if you know, maybe she was like hurting afterwards or something, but, that was certainly something that caught my eye. I wrote it in the recap as well. Cause they're not kind of blurring the lines a little bit there between, you know, kayfabe reality, especially talking about Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee showed up in this, this video package as well. In a couple clips from his podcast, where he was wearing a neck brace and talking about, you know, being injured and whatnot. But obviously I'm pretty sure that is probably work too. So I think, you know, they're kind of blurring the lines there, but I thought this was a really cool segment, really well-produced segment that, if not maybe a little bit on the longer side, but, that, you know, really kind of just showed off, War Games and how, you know, successful War Games was and, how, you know, just brutal and bloody it was. What'd you think of this video package?
Yeah, all I was really able to find on Dakota was a tweet where she said after the match, like, oh, I'm going to feel that in the morning. And, you know, that could very well be an indication that something did happen or maybe news outlets are just trying to get clicks by picking up on it and reading in. I don't know. Could be either way. Hope she's doing fine. It was interesting to see this because so rarely, unless it's something like, you know, what was it, like the snowed in Raw where they reshowed the triple threat from the Royal Rumble, or recently when WWE was trying to figure out how to approach the COVID lockdown, they showed a bunch of stuff from recent pay-per-views, like I believe the men's Royal Rumble in its entirety. But it's so rare that under routine circumstances that we get so much video footage of major spots or occurrences from the recent pay-per-view that people paid to see in full. You'll get still shots, but not video. And I thought, this isn't the kind of thing I would say that they should do more often, but I thought this was a good spot to do it because, you know, we're lucky that in this iteration of it, both War Games matches had more narrative going on than they usually do in NXT's version of what War Games is. But for the most part, these matches are just total spot fests. It's just a bloodlust, carnage, you know, kind of thing. Just see a bunch of people doing a bunch of crazy stuff in a cage with ladders and chairs and trash cans and kendo sticks and everything. It's
Oh my.
Exactly. So that is what this was showing off just a few of those spots and having the wrestlers talk about the wear and tear that it puts on them. So I think that's the kind of thing where if there are viewers out there who did not get the network to watch War Games, and then they see this and they're like, oh, that's what War Games was putting on offer. Maybe I'll hit up the network and watch it then. Watch it now. And I don't feel this gave away too much. That it just didn't give away too much. So they towed a line with it, but I think it was probably a smart way to plug the network, even though that's not directly what they're doing. But I think that was the suggestion here. And for those of us who watched War Games, I think it was completely inoffensive. And the fact that the wrestlers were talking about the wear and tear on them at least provided a little something new, so it didn't just feel like a long recap.
No, I completely agree. Inoffensive is not necessarily the word I would have used, but I like it because, yeah, you're right. It kind of did. It I felt like it captured the vibe of War Games really well. Yeah, I wasn't as high on War Games. I was really high on War Games, but like the women's War Games match, I ended up giving a miss, and I think that was kind of a bit of a, you know, contrary to most people. I think that most people really liked women's War Games. I know both Tom and Kelly did. So, but you know, overall, I think it was a really effective segment. Partially to sell some network subscriptions. Partially kind of, you know, remind us of War Games, but also to, you know, anybody that didn't watch it. Yeah. Kind of show them, what they missed and what's going on, on the network. So no, definitely makes sense to me. Let's see. So, before we go to emails, we'll go to, we'll talk about, there's really only one more segment to talk about. And that is Xia Li and, Boa. And that was an interesting segment. So we've been seeing these, you know, kind of vignettes for a few weeks now, where Boa and Xia Li are almost like being tortured. We're not sure if like they're being tortured or if they're like, I think it was Wade Barrett that said it on commentary. Not sure if they're being tortured or training like Shaolin monks. But they were being shown like, you know, beaten with kendo sticks and bloodied and battered by that elder gentleman that came out with them, a handful of weeks back now, when they were kind of still handing those letters back and forth and things like that. This segment was, I don't know if powerful is the right word for it, but I've kind of been a little bit higher on this segment than I think a lot of people too. So it's kind of been a bit of another contrarian, stance anyway, but, because I know a lot of people are kind of talking about it being, you know, stereotypical and whatnot, and it totally, absolutely is. But I've talked about being a fan of storylines that are, involving family honor and honor in general. I've brought up I'm a big fan of like Klingons and the Star Wars universe, or Star Trek universe. And God, there's going to be fans that are going to lynch me for saying Klingons are in Star Wars. But it's like, I'm a big fan of something like that. So I was I was kind of high on it. And then seeing the segment tonight, like I said, I don't know if powerful is the right word, but it's the word I'm going to use. It just was the way that it was shot, the cinematography in it, it seemed really dark and violent and brutal. You see blood kind of pouring out of Boa's face and mouth, and, you see Xia Li just screaming, whether it be in pain from punching like these wooden spikes. I don't even know what it was that she was punching. They were like these wooden like spike things, kept punching over and over again. I don't know if it was from that or screaming from Boa getting, essentially flogged with a kendo stick. But it was definitely not like something I would expect to see on a PG program. I mean, we did. So, hey, there's that. But I thought it was just like, it was effective, and it certainly got me a little more invested in this personally. But I thought this was really kind of gruesome and violent and graphic. What were your thoughts on it?
I'm reminded of Futurama in the episode that had so many original series cast members on it from Star Trek, when they're talking about something called the Star Trek Wars. And I think it's Zap Brannigan says, oh, you mean the Great Pilgrimage of Star Wars fans? And he's corrected, no, that was the Star Wars Trek. so this, boy, it sure is a good thing that I believe in the talents of Xylee and Boa, because they just, regardless of how I feel about these video segments, they're so intense, or they've become so intense, or maybe it was just this one. I mean, they were just being, it wasn't waterboarded, but it was analogous to waterboarding that was going on last week. But this one, particularly with showing the blood coming from their knuckles was and other parts of their body, was more intense, to the point where it's like, these guys are going to have to deliver on whatever the actual in-ring presentation is going to be. And I absolutely believe that these two can pull that off, and it won't matter whether I thought these videos were any good or not. If it's there in the end, then that'll be a success. And then maybe they can use clips from these videos as, you know, going into commercial break, like show a couple clips, like coming up next, Xia and Boa, and that'll be perfectly fine. This I think was the best produced of these videos yet. It still doesn't feel like something that belongs on NXT TV, but yeah, this one was the best yet. I think that's really all I can make of it yet. I just, these two are really going to have to deliver when it comes time to.
No, I completely agree. Cause it's like, you know, they've been putting so much time into this story now. And then especially like, you know, like you said, I think this is probably the best done, vignette that they've, you know, that they've had so far, you know, for the story. You know, especially now with this and kind of how intense, I think that was the word I was looking for when I kept saying powerful and I couldn't think of intense, but you know, how intense the segment really was. Like, yeah, they are going to really need to deliver. And I hope they do. And I have the confidence, at least in Xia and Boa Lee in ring anyway. But also kind of seeing at least their performance in these produced segments, more so than, you know, the live segments anyway, has been pretty good. So in the live segments, their acting is meh. It's okay. But, yeah, we'll kind of see what happens there, but I don't know. I'm hopeful. I'm a fan of Boa. I'm a fan of Xia Li, so I'm glad to see them getting the time and getting that spotlight. So, thumbs up for me there. All right, we have we'll close out here with a couple emails. I know we normally weave them in a little bit better into the show, but you know what? I don't normally host the show, and I got a lot of balls that I'm juggling right now. Kelly usually does it, and, you know, that's cool, but I'm not Kelly, so there's that. Let's we'll go to an email first from our buddy Kevin Catani. Dr. Kevin P. Catani, PhD, says, salutations, gents. Shoot, pardon my severe delay, because he sent this in, about 13 minutes after we started the show. So pardon my severe delay after watching tonight's episode. I'm left with one question that continues to pick at me. How many more losses can Cameron Grimes eat before he's viewed as a non-factor? I know he has some Teflon coating on him, but with Timothy Thatcher seeming to be brought into his bubble, there's another potential loss there. What do you guys think? Thanks as always. Office hours are now over. The Professor Kevin P. Tanny, PhD. P.S. I love that Finn has now bought himself another 3 weeks to recover. Yes, me too. I thought that was kind of a clever way to get him a little bit extra time to recover. Is kind of, I'll be defending it, and you know, at New Year's Eve, we'll see who's going to be fighting me. So he doesn't need to necessarily defend it, but you know, for at least another, you know, what is it, almost a month at this point. Gets a little bit extra time to recover that broken jaw. Cameron Grimes, I think he could probably eat a few more losses because he's just. At least, so this is at least my thought. Like, and I could be wrong. Who knows? I've been wrong before. It happens. But Cameron Grimes, like, I like that word Teflon because you know his character acting, like just his acting and everything he puts behind that character. He's so much fun to watch. I almost don't care if he loses. And his character in general, just being that annoying heel, you almost want to see him get beat. I think in a way he can take a few more, you know, a few more losses, but I think at some point, especially if they're going to be featuring him as much as they have been, he's got to get a couple definitive wins, whether they're fluke wins or what. I think he's got to get a couple W's under his belt. But I don't think it's like, you know, it has to be the next match. I think, you know, he's got a little bit of time before we start thinking of him as just, you know, up, oh, there's Cameron Grimes, so we know he's going to lose. You know, it's kind of a jobber. I think, you know, I think you still get some of that shine on him, some of that credibility, especially even tonight. And we kind of mentioned, Tom, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, you know, where he kind of went toe to toe with Ciampa a little bit. So, you know, in a way, so I mean, and, you know, Ciampa's kind of one of those that not a lot of people get, you know, a lot of offense in on. So I think they definitely, well, I know they definitely see things in Grimes, or he wouldn't be put in the spots that he, you know, he kind of finds himself in. But I do agree. I think he's eventually at some point going to need to get a couple wins under his belt.
Yeah. And watch the movie Dark Waters and you won't like the word Teflon anymore. But no, of course I take the meaning and I use the word the same way. And I agree that that is what Grimes is. Although, you know, when I hear myself say things like, it's a little weird that Ciampa took so long to put him away since he's such a loser, which is how it felt. It is sometimes I have to pause to remind myself, like, oh yeah, this guy gets over with his mouth, with his big mouth. He can just talk his way back into a feud, you know, very easily, no matter how many losses he's taken. And, you know, I'm sure that we're not at the end of it. As I've thought about it a little more over the course of the show, it seems like we're probably leading to next week will be Timothy Thatcher versus Cameron Grimes, and Ciampa will come and sit on a chair. And it'll just be an inverse of that situation, just like it was, you know, prior, you know, in the build to the Ciampa Thatcher takeover match. So, yeah, I mean, I think he can probably take a whole bunch more. But like I keep saying, I just want I want old Grimey to get treated a little better.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, ultimately, yeah, I would like to see him get treated a little bit better, too. But I think
it is, at least
in the current incarnation, he can take him.
It's definitely not lost on me. And, you know, we mentioned the thing, you know, Legado del Fantasma not on the show, Pat McAfee not on the show, you know, probably a couple other people that feel like they should be involved. Oh, shoot, Adam Cole was not on the show.
Yeah.
Not everybody's on every show. But Dexter Lumis wins the entire feud, wins at TakeOver. Who's on TV on Wednesday? Cameron Grimes.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And we, you know, and I think you even said that on Sunday. It's like, you know, Dexter Lumis is the one that won the feud, but everybody cares about Cameron Grimes. I forget how many, you know, how you said it. It was something like that.
Yeah, I'll give Kelly the credit on that one. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it wasn't me. I knew it wasn't you. Let's put it that way. So all right, we'll go over to an email from JB. Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. How do you think Candace's injury will affect where her and the Gargano family go? What audibles do you predict will be called, or do you think they'll trudge towards forward pretty similarly to the initial plan? As always, love the show and go VIP. So yeah, I don't know. Did they even allude to the fact that Candace had potentially had a broken arm tonight?
I think it was during the video package. She said something like, you know, oh, I broke my arm and I still won the match or something like that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Cause yeah, I couldn't remember if, I don't remember actually hearing that at all. So I wasn't sure yet. And I hadn't heard anything after, Kelly mentioned it after talking, or after being on the media call. So, I don't really have enough time to think about this. What do you think, Tom? And I'll kind of mull it over while you're talking.
Yeah, so I'll be honest, as high on Candace's heel act as I've come to be over the past like 2-3 weeks, not that I hated it before, I just think she's really grown into it over the past 2-3 weeks. And every time someone brings up that they feel like she could be the one to unseat Io, I can't disagree that that sounds like a fine course of action. I think that sounds good. Being honest, though, I do not think that's ever where they've been headed with this. So I truly don't think that Candice's injury derails anything. I think that what we saw tonight, as far as the pieces getting put in play headed toward New Year's Evil, is what they had in mind at War Games, what they had in mind heading into War Games, as you know, how they were going to frame things coming out of that match. And so, I think that we're just going to see her flanking Johnny more. And I think that was probably the way it was going to go anyway. I think that's what we've been building toward.
Yeah, I feel like at least for the most part, this whole heel turn has kind of been a little bit more for Johnny anyway. Now, granted, he did kind of sit back and play, you know, second fiddle to Candice while she was feuding with, was it Shirai? I think it was Shirai. I forget. But, you know, a few months ago, you know, he kind of stepped back while she was doing her thing, which was, you know, which I thought was they did some great stuff then. But like I kind of always felt that this was more for Johnny anyway. You know, Candice kind of, you know, I don't want to say went along for the ride, because that's definitely not what I'm trying to say. But like the heel turn was really initially for Johnny, and she kind of like indirectly benefited from it, I guess is a better way of putting it. But you know, where she kind of turned heel with him and all that. And I, you know, I agree. She's really grown into this over the past few weeks, but I don't yet, you know, kind of listening to you talk and kind of really, you know, starting to think about it. Like, I don't think this is really going to affect anything, you know, affect anything long-term. You know, it might've affected some booking here and there, but, I don't think it's necessarily going to affect an overall plan. I didn't think she was necessarily going to be the person to unseat EO either. I mean, the thoughts crossed my mind. I'm sure I've even talked about it here, but I feel like Candice is, and I hate saying this, but I feel like Candice is somebody that's deserving of the women's title, but may not get it, might not see it. I don't know. There's just this hunch and I hope one day I'm wrong and, you know, I'm standing on my feet cheering as she wins the title. I swear, I hope that's what happens. But like, I just get this hunch in the back of my head that she's kind of got that like, and I hate to compare it to Natalya because Natalya's won titles and stuff, but like almost kind of like Natalya, where she's there to, as more of like a veteran to kind of help out some of the younger girls and things like that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I've made that comparison before.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but cool. So, all right. Thank you, JB. And we'll go to our last email here. And this is a little bit of a lengthy one from our buddy Jack Argyle. Hey, guys, hope all is well with you. After seeing Karrion, and he sent this yesterday. So this is before the show tonight. After seeing Karrion Kross's vignette at War Games, I'm assuming he's heading straight back for the title off of Finn. Assuming he wins that, I hope we get a lengthy title run where he fends off most people on the roster. We also get in a rejuvenated Cosmos. I'm thinking it was a Cosmos is supposed to be a Cross and it was auto-corrected, but it says Cosmos, but I'm thinking it's Cross, looking to prove himself. A Red Hot Kushida, Bronson Reed getting a breakout moment on TakeOver against him. Adam Cole and seeing Kyle take Cross into even deeper waters than Cole does. Ideally, my option would be Damian Priest to finally take Cross out. Don't know how possible it would be considering I'm pretty sure Vince would call him up to main roster in the next year. What do you guys think happens with the NXT title? And we talked a little bit about that, but you know what? I'll break it up. I'll break this email up. Do you have anything to add? What do you think, you know, is going to happen with the NXT championship? Anything we haven't discussed yet?
Yeah, I appreciate you breaking it up like that, but I actually don't have anything to add beyond what we already said. So hopefully what we've said answered Jack's questions. But, of course, I always appreciate hearing what his fantasy booking is looking like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. So he goes, secondly, I just really want Kai and Gonzalez to win the women's tag titles so bad. Gonzalez was so great on the over the weekend, and Dakota was my MVP of the match. I saw somebody say the way that she bumped the match reminded them of Shawn Michaels, and I couldn't agree more. I thought she was the glue that held all of it together. After hearing Triple H say he's hopeful, that was the second point. That was really more of a point than a question. After hearing Triple H say he's hopeful The Undertaker would be part of NXT as a coach at the PC, it got me wondering. I remember listening to Xbox podcast where he would go down to the PC almost once a month to do some coaching. He adores Priest and Io Shirai, and said he's hoping when we get out of the pandemic to go back down to the PC. I seem to remember about a year ago, Scott Hall saying he was down at the PC and he'd be taking, he'd be doing some coaching with AJ Styles' bodyguard, Omos. How beneficial do you think it is to NXT to get these guys on the team to help out? As far as I'm concerned, any time that you can get a very storied, very historied wrestler, to share any knowledge, I think it's a plus. Especially somebody like The Undertaker, somebody that like him, he went through the territories. He's probably one of, if not the most respected guy in the business. So to get somebody like The Undertaker at the PC, everybody's going to listen to him. Anything he says, everybody in attendance is going to be hanging on his every word and listening to him because, well, that's kind of what he is. He just commands that respect. But even if it's not The Undertaker, Jack brings up, X-Pac and Scott Hall and a couple other people. There's always Christian does a lot of training down there too and coaching. As a guest coach and stuff. Anytime you can get somebody that knows their stuff, in to kind of help out is a plus. One podcast, if you guys haven't listened to it, talking kind of is a little bit of a sidebar, but talking about, learning from the old timers. If you haven't heard it yet, listen to, Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard's, recent podcast on Pat Patterson. It wasn't a deep dive. It was really just, Bruce talking about Pat Patterson, kind of telling some personal stories and things like that. But he really kind of starts talking about all of the contributions that Pat Patterson made to the business and what he meant to a lot of the guys and girls in the locker room, and just kind of the wisdom that he passed on and shared over the years, to not just everybody, but to Bruce himself. And I think that's that podcast and kind of like that Pat Patterson example, that Bruce shares in his podcast, I think kind of answers this question in a way of taking somebody that has all that knowledge like The Undertaker or Pat Patterson and passing it on to the younger guys. Tom?
Yeah. How publicized it gets varies from person to person, but they're under normal circumstances, they are bringing in people like that all the time. And that is just such an invaluable asset to what it means to be signed as a trainee, to WWE's Performance Center and the kind of tutelage that these guys are getting. I think it's funny that Jack spells Big Jordan's new name as Omos, but I don't blame him because that's how they pronounce it on Raw. It's Omos, I think, the giant Omos, O-M-O-S.
That's what I thought.
But on Raw, they keep saying it like it's Edward James. Edward James Olmos. I second guessed whether it was Edward or Edgar. Now I'm triple guessing. Damn it! I know the guy's name.
I know
the guy's name until it's time to say it on a podcast. But
of course.
Anyway, I made a stand and deliver joke about that during Raw because they just keep on saying it the wrong way. But yeah, someone like Jordan having Scott Hall giving him pointers, even if it's just for one day. I mean, like you said with Pat Patterson, there are people who Pat Patterson just said like one thing to in passing and they have carried it with them because he knows what the hell he's talking about.
Absolutely.
So yeah, completely invaluable. And you do get that in other places, but like there's a school nearby. There are a bunch of schools nearby here, as you might imagine, but there's one in particular that's always bringing in people to do seminars or to do training sessions, but you gotta pay to be a part of it. And so there's some, you gotta give some skin to get something in return, and being signed to WWE is a different situation. But tangentially, this particular school recently brought in Bob Roop to do a seminar, and that was one where I was so tempted just to be like, okay, I'm not a wrestler, I feel like it's kind of a sacred thing, but I feel like I want to spend the seminar fee to go listen to Bob Roop speak. I feel like that would be incredible. But
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, and I think, you know, not just in wrestling, but I mean really in really just in about any profession. Anytime you can get somebody that knows more than you, learn. At least that's how I always view it. Like if, you know, they, like really anybody, like I'm an IT guy. You know, I've been in IT for years, you know, systems administrator, things like that. And anytime that I work with somebody that knows more than me, I'm like, hey, show me what you're doing. Don't just do it for me. Show me, because like I want to learn. So yeah, I think that's kind of just invaluable, really, in any business and in life in general. So
yeah,
those are my words of wisdom for the day, guys. All right, and on that note, I think that's also our podcast. So I guess we're ending on my words of wisdom. So that's cool. I like that. And I mean I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I typically write the NXT hits and misses, but Tom took over that for me tonight. I did the live recap for Kelly, so you can check that out on pwtorch.com. You can check out the hits and misses that Tom wrote on pwtorch.com when he posts them up as well. And like I said earlier in the show, I also have a YouTube channel where we take a look at the therapeutic benefits of tabletop role-playing games. We're currently looking at a game that is that's called Project Biomodus, which takes a kind of a deep dive into the really odd, well, not odd, but interesting, and very interesting world of transhumanism and kind of this philosophy behind transhumanism, which is a lot of fun to play. Tom is actually in that gameplay as well, which is why I'm spending a little bit of time talking about it, because, well, we're both in it. So that was a lot of fun to do. Tom, who are you?
It was indeed, and I'm looking forward to seeing episode 2 when I actually get more involved. I'm at Tom Staup on Twitter, and I will post those hits and misses probably around midday on Thursday, so you can look forward to those. It'll be similar to what I said on the podcast, but in the rigid format of whether it's a hit or a miss, you'll see where I lined up. Again, it's going to end up pretty glowing this time. I never get these on the weeks where I trash the show. But yeah. And then of course, VIP members can listen to NXT 8 years back on Saturdays. If you haven't heard by now, it is what it sounds like. Kelly Wells and I talk about NXT as it was 8 years ago to the day. We recorded this week's episode earlier, talking about Sasha Banks's debut and Eric Rowan's debut. We've still got Roman Reigns on the show working heel. We've still got Seth Rollins as our champion. There's some very odd main roster crossover going on. Paige is on the rise. There's some really cool stuff that we're tracking and some really weird stuff that we're tracking. So I think it's a good listen, even if on today's recording I did get a little rambly. So, you know, sometimes that happens.
Yeah, well, you and me both. You and me both. We like to ramble. We like to ramble. But you know what? The rambling is over. And we will be back next week. I'm assuming Kelly Wells will be back from his top secret assignment. But if not, then, you know, we'll be here at least. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Have a good one, guys.